I'm Molly Wansell.
And I'm Geoffrey Wansell.
And for the last 16 years or thereabouts, we have been having lunch every Saturday, and often our conversation turns to murder.
And that's what's prompted us to launch this true crime podcast called Blood Ties.
Hi everyone, welcome back to the Blood Ties podcast. I'm Molly Wansell and I'm here with my father, Geoffrey Wansell.
Hello everyone, welcome back. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your support. Thank you for your messages, all of which are absolutely treasured. I'm very grateful.
Geoffrey's in charge now.
Well, sort of. I've got to be more in charge. My level of responsibility is rising.
Yeah.
But one of the reasons we've got to do all sorts of things. But I'm telling the story of a British general practitioner called Dr. John Bodkin Adams.
We would assume you've all listened to part one, but if you haven't, maybe go back to last week first.
Yes. But the point is that he was a British general practitioner who was accused of murdering one elderly patient.
That we all know it looks like more.
We suspect there were more. But it's a case which is laced with the English class system. Bodkin Adams was a very respectable GP in Eastbourne, a South Coast resort.
Are you officially started?
No, I'll be in a minute.
This is just preamble.
Yeah, I'm just doing a preamble. Who some people suggested was killing his patients for the money, for inheritances.
For his Rolls-Royce addiction.
Yes, and he did like Rolls-Royces. So that's the preamble. So what are you doing?
What would be your car of choice, Dad, if you could collect them and be driven around?
Well, I wouldn't choose a Rolls-Royce.
No. Geoffrey looks very unimpressed.
I suppose if you had all the money in the world, which I don't.
But we're imagining we do.
Well, I think if you can afford it, I think have a Bentley. And Bentleys are much more classy. And they're sleeker and they're beautiful, some of them. I mean, when I was on the road at the end of last year, we kept visiting Bentley garages to test Bentleys.
Did you? Fun.
It was a very strange experience. But oh yes, if I had all the money in the world, I'd have a Bentley.
You'd have your man outside and your driver outside, man or woman, or they.
Yes.
Ready to go.
Yeah.
At any point.
But you see, that's the strange thing about that kind of luxury. I mean, I've known people who have private jets. I mean, you have to have three pilots on constantly eating and drinking on your account. So they're ready to go at a moment's notice.
Fair, I hadn't thought of that. That's a cushy one, isn't it? Perhaps you want to fly a private jet and be...
I've had some wonderful trips in private jets, but...
I've never flown in a PJ.
Just the thought of keeping these three people.
I think you have to have like really sort of superfluous cash, don't you?
Yes, you do.
That's money to burn.
Yeah.
That's just extra.
But you see, it gets very competitive because I can remember one point, one man I knew, he said he had to buy a 757, private 757, because... Rupert Murdoch had one.
I don't know anything about planes, but that you're looking at me in a way that suggests that's a very big plane.
It's a very big plane.
Okay.
Very big. We're not talking about 737.
You don't need one of those all on your own, do you?
Oh, well, apparently the reason I was given that he had to buy the 757 is that it had a very sophisticated landing system for fog. In other words, you could get it down.
That's a real justification, isn't that? Someone who really needs to justify what they're doing.
Yes.
It's like when people justify things to me, I'm like, you can justify that to yourself. I don't have a problem.
Yes. But, I mean, it's almost quite difficult to find places that you can get it down in. I mean, the 757 needs quite a long runway.
Oh, I see what you mean, yeah.
Yeah. I once travelled in a...
How impractical.
I once travelled in a King Air, which is a turboprop which that could land on a grass runway. And that was very interesting. It was most remarkable.
Where were you landing?
Somewhere in Mexico.
Right, well, on that note.
Sorry, sitting completely.
Back to your day job.
Back to the day job. Back to Dr. John Bodkin Adams.
So this is Dr. John Bodkin Adams part two.
If you haven't listened to part one, all I would say is that Bodkin Adams is a GP who is suspected of, and indeed charged with, the murder of an elderly patient. Edith Morell, in 1950. We are actually now at the beginning of 1957. At this point in British legal history, premeditated murder is a capital offence.
Punishable by death.
Punishable by hanging. But what astonished the two men from the murder squad in Scotland Yard was the Attorney General, Manningham Buller, Sir Reginald Manningham Buller, decided to charge Adams with the murder of Edith Morell. After all, she died in 1950, and that was 7 years ago, or almost, and she'd been cremated. They both thought it would have been wiser, and indeed much more suitable, to charge Bodkin Adams with the murder of Gertrude Hullett, who'd after all been only 50 when she died in 1956. And her body had not been cremated. But what then emerged was literally a sensation. I should give you a little background. To succeed in getting a guilty conviction to a premeditated murder charge, the prosecution has to show three things. One, the death had not been natural. Two, that Bodkin Adams had committed a murderous act. And three, Bodkin Adams had an intent to kill. The Attorney General was convinced that Mrs. Morell, whom you may remember survived for 2 years with all those injections by Bodkin Adams of a mixture of morphine and heroin, the Attorney General believed, well, some suggest he didn't believe, some suggest he'd brought that case because he knew Bodkin Adams would not be convicted because of Bodkin Adams' connections. But he felt that the consistent use of injections was evidence of an intent to kill her. The committal, in those days there was a, well, still is actually, the committal hearing was held at Lewes in East Sussex, which is not very far from Eastbourne, where, believe it or not, the chief magistrate is Sir Roland Gwynne.
Bodkin's friend.
Friend and confidant of Bodkin Adams.
Potential lover.
He recused himself from the proceedings because of his connections with Bodkin Adams. And then the 21st of January 1957, Bodkin Adams was committed for trial at the Old Bailey. The £1,000 cheque, you may recall, that Gertrude Hullett gave Bodkin Adams to buy an MG, which had been cleared quickly, funnily enough, went missing from the evidence locker. Now, could that have had anything to do with the fact that Bodkin Adams' friend was the Deputy Chief Constable? Or was that just chance? By the by, a misfortune. But then the Attorney General made another very interesting decision. He decided that there would be a second trial for the killing of Mrs. Hullett after the first trial, because he convinced himself that there was much more likely to get capital punishment, the death sentence for Bodkin Adams, if there were two deaths, because coincidentally the law was just changing. A single murder by poisoning would not classify as a capital offence. However, two would. Detective Superintendent Hannan was astonished that the Attorney General had decided to proceed with Morell, because she was, after all, 81, and her body had been cremated, as we said earlier. So, hang on, you've got no forensic evidence. Nevertheless, it went to trial. Manning and Buller, the Attorney General, is prosecuting. The trial at the Old Bailey was a sensation. I mean, queues round the block, newspaper headlines. Bodkin Adams is absolutely
front and centre.
No, I didn't.
He's saying he didn't do it.
I didn't do it, no. I'll refer you back to something from part one.
He says it can't be murder.
Yes, murder. Can you prove it was murder? I didn't think you could prove it was murder. She was dying in any way, in any event. Easing the passing of a dying patient cannot be described as murder. That was the crux of the...
But did he say that, though? Because then he's saying that he did ease the passing, so yes. That is saying he did do it. But well, he's saying it's not murder.
That's where the wonderful moral dilemma here is.
But it's not a moral dilemma, it's still murder.
Well,
it's not dignitas.
No, well, let's...
He didn't run his private dignitas. They didn't come to him being like, I want to die.
He insisted that several of them did.
Mm.
She was dying anyway.
Along with giving him all their stuff.
Yes.
Yeah, sounds dodgy to me.
Well, yes. I think it probably sounded dodgy to quite a lot of people. The trial went on for 17 days. At that point, the longest murder trial in British legal history. The case turned on the evidence of two nurses who'd worked with Bodkin Adams, who'd originally said, well, we were asked to leave the room when he gave these special injections. But when the defence got up and their opening argument, they produced the nurses' notebooks, which did not mention them leaving the room. And the prosecution hadn't seen them, or had they not bothered to look at them. So the nurses were destroyed in the witness box by Bodkin Adams' defence lawyer.
Yeah.
The judge in the case was Mr. Justice Sir Patrick Devlin, later be Lord Devlin, one of the most distinguished jurists and legal experts this country's ever seen. And at this point, Bodkin Adams is 58, wealthy, well-respected, well-connected, and utterly dismissive of the charge. And the prosecution relied on the fact that he had injected them deliberately. Yes?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. As the judge was to put it, and I think this is a wonderful analysis, it is a most curious situation, perhaps unique in these courts, that the act of murder has to be proved by expert evidence. There are no forensics.
Mm.
There are two doctors appear for the prosecution and one for the defence. But the nurse's evidence was to prove crucial. Sir Frederick Lawrence, QC, who defended Bodkin Adams, who incidentally had never defended a criminal case. He was actually a divorce lawyer. But he'd been briefed by the Medical Defence Union, a body to protect doctors, to establish a principle that it is not possible for a doctor to kill his patients if he's trying to ease their passing. There is the crux of the case. Another thing that Lawrence, defending Bodkin Adams, did, which was absolutely unexpected and at that point highly unusual, he didn't call Bodkin Adams to give evidence on his own behalf. In a phrase that always resonates in my mind, he wanted to prevent Bodkin Adams chatting himself to the gallows because he was that confident.
Smart.
So
he had his money paid for good lawyers.
Bodkin Adams never gave evidence, which again came as a shock, not just to the judge, to Devlin, but also to the press, all of whom believed that Bodkin Adams couldn't resist going into the witness box. You know,
That's smart.
It was an extraordinary bit of legal cleverness on the part of Lawrence. And Lawrence summed up, and I think this is wonderful, really. He told the jury, trying to ease the last hours of the dying is a doctor's duty. It has been twisted and turned into an accusation of murder. The jury acquitted Bodkin Adams.
Bonkers.
As I said...
Can you imagine if every single doctor was like, well, they wanted to go?
Well, in this particular case, that was Bodkin Adams' defence.
And give me loads of cash.
And a Rolls Royce.
And at least one Rolls Royce.
Yes.
Minimum.
But the Medical Defence Union, to be fair, had insisted to Lawrence on behalf of Bodkin Adams and indeed on behalf of doctors everywhere that they were perfectly entitled to ease the passing of a dying patient if that was what was there in their mind. Now, how do you distinguish?
Yeah, but you can't do that.
Well,
that isn't still a thing, is it?
Well, I'll come back to that in a little bit. Bodkin Adams, to call it a sensation is underestimating. It was an incredible case. I was a small boy, I was 12, but it was just unforgettable. Every newspaper, you know. Bodkin Adams became a very celebrated figure. I mean, he was on the front page of every newspaper. But by then, the Attorney General, Manningham Buller, who'd been prosecuting, decided not to proceed with the second murder trial.
Ah, okay. Because he knew he wouldn't win
Mrs. it. Hullett. But he did something which is very rare, again, and that's what makes this such a fascinating case. He didn't put Bodkin Adams back on trial. He left it hanging over him. It was a very, I'm not going to go into the Latin, but basically he said, I'm not going to proceed with the prosecution, leaving the hint that Bodkin Adams might have been guilty of the second murder,
mm-hmm.
or indeed might have been guilty of other murders. It's really quite interesting. And it was a very strange decision. Because conventionally, and this is certainly what Devlin, the judge, thought. The judge thought they will simply proceed immediately to a second trial. But then, all of a sudden, the prosecution say, well, we're not going to proceed. So Bodkin Adams walks free. Doesn't go to jail. Walks out. Now, the new Prime Minister at this point, if you like conspiracy theories, and I'm not saying I do, but this is one of the... that the new Prime Minister was Harold Macmillan, who happened to be the brother-in-law of the 10th Duke of Devonshire, who had been a patient of Bodkin Adams and who had been looked after him admirably. No, I'm not saying it's a conspiracy. I'm simply saying it's an interesting...
You're going to tell me they were all Freemasons at the end of this?
I'm not going to tell you they were all Freemasons. I mean, but it would be fair to say that conspiracy theories abound. I mean, one of them was that the police, Hannam, the detective superintendent from Scotland Yard, had been briefing the Daily Mail and the Daily Mirror about Bodkin Adams' guilt. So there are all sorts of conspiracy theories running around. It was unfair on Bodkin Adams because the police had become convinced. Yeah, it was one of those. Could he have got a fair trial? I suspect he did get a fair trial. I suspect all sorts of other forces at work, we don't know. In those days, nobody ever talked about the deep state and who might do what to whom and things like that. It was just simply not talked about. After the trial, Bodkin Adams resigned from the NHS and in fact was convicted at Lewes Crown Court in July 1957 for forging prescriptions and making false statements on cremation certificates. And on the 27th of November, and he also didn't keep a drugs register. Sorry, he neglected to keep a drugs register. Surprise there.
No surprise there.
Yeah. Okay. He was, on the 27th of November 1957, he was struck off. Nevertheless, he continued to practice as a general. Guess what? He was prescribing over-the-counter drugs. He wasn't allowed to prescribe dangerous drugs, but nevertheless continued to visit his patients and continued to drive round Eastbourne in his Rolls Royce.
This guy's a joke.
It is extraordinary, don't you think?
Yeah.
He applied twice to be reinstated, and in 1961, guess what? He was reinstated by the General Medical Council. And in 1962... he was allowed to prescribe dangerous drugs again.
And ease the passing of his patients.
He's still practicing in Eastbourne. Mm. He's still driving around in his Rolls Royce with his chauffeur. He becomes, incidentally, president of the British Clay Pigeon Shooting Association.
Oh, well, good, yeah.
You know?
Another string to his bow.
Another string to his bow. In fact, he proceeds with this splendid lifestyle until June 1983, 20 years. And he's shooting, as a collection of guns and pistols, he's shooting in Sussex when he falls down and breaks his hip. He's 84. He's taken to Eastbourne Hospital, where he, I'm afraid, gets a chest infection and dies on the 4th of July, 1983, aged 84.
That is bonkers.
He leaves a legacy in his will of £400,000. But he left, perhaps even more importantly, a legal legacy. The first of which was which is called the principle of double effect. If a doctor is trying to treat a seriously ill patient, as a result of which their life is inadvertently shortened, cannot be found guilty of murder. Secondly, no prejudice should be attached to any defendant who does not give evidence in his own defence. Bodkin Adams, you remember, did not go into the witness box. And the reporting of committal proceedings, which happened in Lewes, which was very vivid, that is no longer allowed. You can't go to a committal proceeding as a reporter, as I've done. You can't report them until the trial itself.
Okay.
Because it's regarded as prejudicing the jury pool.
Fair.
It's important to remember that no doctor has been convicted of murdering their patients in Britain until Harold Shipman in 2000. And that was on forensic evidence. This case, there was no forensic evidence.
Mm.
So where is the moral line? When is easing the patient's passing? Because, of course, you might get a canteen of cutlery or a car or whatever else.
But what's the... Like, it doesn't make any sense. It's like, if you were... Not to be morbid, but if you were going to die and, like, you wanted to speed your death because you had MS or something...
Yep.
If I helped you, I'd go to prison.
You would.
But if you're a doctor, you don't.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't make sense to me.
Hmm. I don't think it makes sense to many people.
It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, well, there have been so many very public cases.
I don't think there is, like, a line. I just, you know, I personally think if somebody wants to die, like, and they should be allowed to do that, like, you should be allowed to.
Suicide.
Assisted suicide.
Yeah. I'm in favour of assisted suicide.
Me too.
Always have been.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think you have to have, you know, well, I guess it's difficult when people don't have their, you know, but I... You know, I don't think you can then refer back to a doctor and go, well, they did say they wanted to. It's like, well, their family don't think that they did, or, you
well,
know.
Well, remember the one of the cases with the family specifically?
Yeah, you can't, you, the person needs to, if they're compos mentis, the person needs to say if they do or not. You can't just be like, oh, sorry, well, they did want to go. It's like, well, they didn't last time I checked.
No, yes, they didn't tell me that, yes.
Yeah.
But it is, whatever way you look at it, it's a very vivid, and it's an issue that we confront to this day.
Yeah.
You know, seriously ill, dying, but how quickly are they dying? Have they got some terrible disease they're never going to recover
from?
Like
that poor boy on the life support that long ago.
Yeah. And Bodkin Adams' defence was, I can't be killing somebody who... I'm only trying to help them.
I'm not down. I flatly refuse.
I'm not suggesting for a moment that you shouldn't flatly refuse. I'm simply saying it's a very interesting issue.
I don't think it is an issue.
Okay.
I think he's dodgy and...
Well, Detective Superintendent Hannon believed he'd committed at least 14 murders.
Well, me and Hannon are on the same page.
Yeah. At least 14.
You don't need 20 sets of cutlery.
Nobody does.
I mean, you need one.
Well, why do you need 12 cameras in leather cases?
No reason, unless you're a photographer.
Well, Bodkin Adams wasn't a photographer.
I know this. Don't need more than one Rolls Royce, probably.
Yeah, why do you go to the mayor of Eastport at 9 o'clock every morning?
To administer his medication.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's one word for it.
Well, we'll never know.
No, but Bodkin Adams died at 84, still practicing medicine, and was never convicted. It is, I think, just a... I mean, I've forgotten what a wonderful case it was, and it is truly...
There's a lot there.
It's truly interesting.
There's a lot there.
Yeah.
That's a good one. Thanks, Dad.
Pleasure. I enjoyed it. And funnily enough, as I say, I went to see the house just entirely by accident. And I thought, oh, I must do it. Because a lot of people now wouldn't remember who he was.
Body. He died the year I was born.
Yes.
No less.
Mm.
Cool. Thank you.
Pleasure. Have you got a wonderful week coming up?
Quite busy.
Oh, gosh.
We've got a company social and we're going axe throwing.
Oh, crikey.
I know.
Oh, dear.
I don't really feel up for axe throwing, but I shall participate in the social.
I'm certainly not up for axe throwing. The whole idea of it sends a shiver down my spine.
Apparently you're not allowed to drink before you do it. I think it'll be a struggle to stop my colleagues drinking before they go. But we shall see.
My goodness me. So all you have to say about Dr. Bodkin Adams was that he was a convicted fraudster. Not a convicted serial killer.
No. He's dodgy AF.
I'm not going axe throwing this week.
You're not?
No.
Oh, that's a shame.
I'm pleased to say.
Such a shame.
Yeah, I've just been reading the new Ian Rankin.
Just
new
trying Rebus. To stay upright this week.
I'll try and stay upright. I'll try not to fall over again. I'm reading the new James Patterson, Alex Cross's 30th year. I'm still ploughing my way through all manner of things. But anyway, I'm not doing anything nearly as exotic as our axe throwing.
No, well, there you go. Thank you very much to all the people that help us, our producer, Sam, my brother Dan, who did the music, my friend George, who drew our caricature, to Audio Boom for hosting us, to Jeffrey for all the hard work, and to you, the listeners, thank you so much.
Yes, thank you so much. It's really important to us that you're there. And I've had such lovely messages from people saying welcome back and hope you had a good little break. And I hope you've also liked the couple of solo ones I've done. I'm going to do some more of those.
Jeffrey's solo eps.
Yes, I'm going to do some other ones on those, which gives Mo a bit more free time. But thank you so much. And as I've said before, bad things happen to good people. So do please be careful out there.